A big part of their business is photography, shooting both products and models for catalogs, Greer explained. For 25 years, the way the business worked was that Greer and Associates would get an assignment. The client would tell Greer exactly what sort of shot he was looking for and would trust the Greer team to come up with the right image. Like all commercial photographers, Greer would use a Polaroid camera to take a picture of the model or product he was shooting to see if his creative instinct was right and then shoot with real film. Once the pictures were taken, Greer would send the film out to a photo lab to be developed and color separated. If a picture needed to be touched up, it would be sent to another lab that specialized in retouching. 20 years ago, we decided we would not process the film we shot, Greer explained. We would leave that technical aspect to other professionals who had the exact technology, training, and expertise, and a desire to make money that way. We wanted to make money by taking the pictures. It was a good plan then, and may be a good plan today, but it is no longer possible. Why? The world went flat, and every analog process went digital, virtual, mobile, and personal. In the last 3 years, digital cameras for professional photographers achieved a whole new technical level that made them equal to, if not superior to, traditional film cameras. So we experimented with several different cameras and chose the current state-of-the-art camera that was most like our analog film cameras, Greer said. It was incredibly liberating at first. All of the thrill and excitement of photography were there, except that the film was free. Because it was digital, we didn't have to buy film, and we didn't have to go to the lab to have it processed and wait to get it back. If we were on location and shooting something, we could see if we got the shot right away. There was instant gratification. But then Ken and his team discovered that this new liberating technology could also be enslaving. We discovered that not only did we now have the responsibility of shooting the picture and defining the desired artistic expression, we had to get involved in the technology of the photograph. We woke up one morning and said, "We are the lab." Once the technology made that possible, Greer's customers demanded it. Because Greer could control the image farther down the supply chain, they said he should control it. He must control it. The clients said, "We will not pay you extra for it," said Greer. "It is not what we signed up for, but the competitive marketplace and the technology forced us into it." He continued, "It is as if the manufacturers of technology got together with our clients and outsourced all these different tasks to us. If we put our foot down and say you have to pay for each of these services, there is someone right behind us saying, 'I will do it all.' So the services required go up significantly, and the fees you can charge stay the same or go down. It's called commoditization, and in the wake of the triple convergence, it is happening faster and faster across a whole range of industries. When everything is the same and supply is plentiful," said Greer, "clients have too many choices and no basis on which to make the right choice. And when that happens, you're a commodity. You are vanilla." Fortunately, Greer responded to commoditization by opting for the only survival strategy that works: a shovel, not a wall. He and his associates dug inside themselves to locate the company's real core competency, and this has become the primary energy source propelling their business forward in the flat world. Vanilla just won't put food on the table anymore. "You have to offer something totally unique," said Greer. "You need to be able to make chocolate chip cookie dough, or cherry Jerry Garcia, or chunky monkey, three of the more exotic brands of Ben & Jerry's ice cream that are very non-vanilla. It used to be about what you were able to do," said Greer. "Clients would say, 'Can you do this? Can you do that?' Now it's much more about the creative flair and personality you can bring to the assignment. It's all about imagination." Rule number 2: and the small shall act big. One way small companies flourish in the flat world is by learning to act really big. And the key to being small and acting big is being quick to take advantage of all the new tools for collaboration to reach farther, faster, wider, and deeper. I can think of no better way to illustrate this rule than to tell the story of another friend, Fadi Gandour, the co-founder and CEO of Aramex, the first homegrown package delivery service in the Arab world and the first and only Arab company to be listed on the NASDAQ. He and a friend raised some money and in 1982 started a mini Federal Express for the Middle East to do parcel delivery. Gandour's idea was to approach American companies like Federal Express and Airborne Express that did not have a Middle East presence and offer to become their local delivery service, playing on the fact that an Arab company would know the region and how to get around unpleasantries like the Israeli invasion of Lebanon, the Iran-Iraq war, and the American invasion of Iraq. Airborne responded positively, and Gandour used that to build his own business and then buy up or partner with small delivery firms from Egypt to Turkey to Saudi Arabia and later all the way over to India, Pakistan, and Iran, creating his own regional network. Airborne did not have the money that Federal Express was investing in setting up its own operations in every region of the globe, so it created an alliance, bringing together some 40 regional delivery companies, like Aramex, into a virtual global network. Eventually, Airborne bought 9% of Aramex to cement their relationship. The arrangement worked well for everyone, and Aramex came to dominate the parcel delivery market in the Arab world, so well that in 1997, Gandour decided to take the company public on Broadway, also known as the NASDAQ. Aramex continued to grow into a nearly $200 million a year company with 3,200 employees and without any big government contracts. Its business was built for and with the private sector, highly unusual in the Arab world. Because of the dot-com boom, which deflected interest from brick-and-mortar companies like Aramex, and then the dot-com bust, which knocked out the NASDAQ, Aramex's stock price never really took off. Thinking that the market simply did not appreciate its value, Gandour, along with a private equity firm from Dubai, bought the company back from its shareholders in early 2002.